now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And babes.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain! Back to the House of Pain!
Welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From Class of the Cults and all the cheese in between, the movies are beeved, entertainment is grade A, and I am your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, and I'm joined by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jay. How are you? Today we're going to be doing a surprise hit from 1973 called S.
But the last S is silent, so we leave that off. Okay. And we'll get to it right after this.
Once this motion picture sinks its fangs into you, you'll never be the same. Don't say it. Hiss it. Don't say it. Hiss it. Don't say it. Hiss it.
What the hell are you doing here? Get out!
Margaret, what is this? I feel like my guts are being rearranged.
Touch your skin. It's scaled. Look for your legs. They're gone. Feel your body. It's cold. And listen for the hissing.
I love you.
Your face.
What about it?
It looks different.
If he doesn't want to see you...
You're hiding something from me. I know it.
King Cobra versus Mongoose. Or is it man versus man? The most unusual horror film ever made. See it.
Opened in July of 1973 with a 99-minute running time on a budget of about just over $1 million. The reported box office was $1 million, but these numbers are... It's kind of hard because the movies in the 70s and stuff, you can't always get the best. It's almost like getting things in the 50s. That's near impossible to get actual accurate budget. But this thing played for a long time on TV, and it played in drive-ins and stuff like that. It was directed by Bernard Kowalski. Now, that's a name that might not sound familiar, but he also directed Attack of the Giant Leeches, Night of the Blood Beast, and Krakatoa, East of Java. If you don't know what those movies are, that's why you don't know that guy. Produced by Daniel Stripek. The writers were Hal Dresden and Daniel Stripek. Music by Patrick Williams. It was distributed by Universal Pictures. Your main stars, Struthers Martin as Dr. Carl Stoner, Dirk Benedict as David Blake, that's Face from A-Team, and Heather Menzies as Christina Stoner. Those are the main people. There's a bunch of other people in the movie, but those are the main...
Yeah, Heather Menzies was one of the eye candy in Piranha.
Technically, she's not.
Just one of the eye candy. I mean, wasn't the main star.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
Also, in this movie, the makeup effects was done by John Chambers and his associate Nick Marcellino. John Chambers won an Academy Award in 1968 for the original Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm. All right, like this is a Universal release, so it's not like this was. This wasn't one of their, you know, major dramas of the year, anything along those lines. But they definitely put people on it. There's $1 million budget doesn't sound like much, but when you see the movie, there's not a lot of sets. There's not a lot of it's all, you know, there's a laboratory. There's a carnival scene. There's not a lot of sets to have to, you know, put money for anyway. So
for those of you who are wondering who Strother Martin is, Strother Martin was the warden in Cool Hand Luke in 1967. He was the minor foreman in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, but he has always been considered an A-list second biller. And whenever you see him in a movie, not that he steals the movie, but he is excellent.
Yeah. But 1973, those movies were all earlier.
Yes. Well, one was 67 and then 69 for those two.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's in those movies, he's not young either. It's not like he's a young man.
No, he's not clearly, a young man.
Yeah. So, all right. So, our movie begins with Dr. Carl Stoner selling a mysterious creature in a crate to a carnival owner. It is later discovered that the creature is actually part man, part snake, the result of one of Stoner's bizarre experiments. College student David Blake is hired as an assistant by Stoner, an ortheologist. It means he deals with snakes.
Right.
So, it transpires that Stoner's previous assistant had mysteriously left town without telling anyone. Stoner tries to explain this as he has gone back home to attend a sick relative, which people are really willing to believe. I think we said this at the end of 7 Voyages of Sinbad, but this is a very different movie. Like, that was a movie made in 1958 that's supposed to be in Arabian times. This is a movie made in 1973 that takes place in 1973.
Right.
Nowadays, if you said he went to visit a sick relative, there would be like 10 Google searches happening and people tracking things down. They're like, oh, okay, someone goes missing there, so...
I hope he gets better.
Yeah, I hope whoever it is didn't die. But then it's like later, they didn't have an aunt. Anyway, so Stoner begins David on a course of injections, purportedly as a safeguard against being bitten by a snake in his lab. David's skin slowly starts to change and even peel like snake skin. He begins to have strange nightmares and goes into a coma while having dinner with Stoner and doesn't wake up until a few days later. Now, the scene during dinner when he just keels... The daughter is just so accepting. Oh, he must be having reactions to the injections. Like, keeled over during dinner, slap him into bed. He also begins to lose weight as well, but Stoner tells him those are the side effects of the venom. David begins a romance with Stoner's daughter, Christina. And although her father objects, he insists that she not have any sexual relations with him. Okay, so now you have... that's when they go skinny dipping, right? Now, the skinny dipping scene, you're like, oh, okay. Like, and I didn't notice this. When we first saw this movie, you had recorded it off of... Okay, so let's go real local here. In New York, ABC is Channel 7, because it's called ABC 7. If you live in New York, in the city, in the Bronx, in the Westchester, it's ABC 7. It's still ABC 7, right? It's just famous for that. But Channel 8 was the ABC affiliate, I want to say, out of Connecticut?
Yeah, it was out of New Haven.
Out of New Haven. Okay, right. So that channel didn't always come in, but when it did come in, it was crystal clear, and then, because you had to move the antenna on the roof, which, thank God, is not there anymore. But, you know, you had to move that around to get a better signal. But this was on late, and they used to show weird stuff on the Channel 8. That was where you had the Thompson Twins concert. Like, they would show stuff. Channel 7 would just show whatever they're going to show, and this would show different things. And when you recorded this off TV, I mean, obviously you had commercials and stuff and whatever, you had to cut them out. This scene never made, didn't I didn't ever thought twice about, because they're going skinny dipping. And in this scene, there are superimposed shrubberies.
Right.
Covering her breasts, covering his bottom, covering her bottom. Like, they were superimposed. And you're like, but you don't think anything of it because everything kind of looks that grainy look to it. So, like, I guess there were shrubberies in this scene.
Yeah.
When you watch the DVD, you're like, oh, shrubberies look weird. When you watch the Blu-ray, you're like, who put that there?
Right. Well,
they look like stickers.
Yes.
They actually look like stickers put on the screen.
Yeah. Well, this scene is it was predated, precursed before, but David has quite a few scenes with his shirt off. Now, he's not Hercules by any means, but he looks pretty good with his shirt off. But the nudity at the lake, you do see her behind, but it's PG. I mean, this
you
is,
can't see it. No, you bear, no. It's all anything you see is blurred. No, I'm telling you that. I went back and I looked at this. I said, you can't see anything. When she goes, when as soon as he goes to take, because she takes her glasses off,
right,
and she can't see. So you see him blurry naked, and then she gets naked, and there's all of a sudden a branch sticking right across across her butt.
But for about a split second on the Blu-ray,
you're going frame by frame on a Blu-ray to see
the
crack of a butt. That's what it's so.
Well, no, but again, we're doing a review of the movie.
Yeah, I'm just
saying. We've got to be honest with our listeners.
Yeah. So, and that's also when they have the carnival, and that's where we see the Snake Man, obviously, that has to be in the very beginning, the Snake Man that's taken away. That's the assistant. And that's where he gets in a fight with the jock, Steve, right? Where he starts biting at him like as if he's a snake. And it's just really awkward, like the way, because he has to bite at him like a snake would strike. But a snake doesn't have arms and legs and has a different kind of spine and stuff. So he's rearing back his head to bite at him. And it looks like he's throwing the worst headbutts in the world. But that's where that part comes in. And Steve comes over to the house. And he sneaks in Christina's bedroom window where there's a python that attacks him. Now, again, most people see a python. They're like, oh, a python. Like, that's got to be... Pythons are not slimy. They're not like, I mean, if they're in the water, they're wet. It's a different story. But pythons are having friends who've had pet pythons and, you know, held them. And I mean, even Haley, you know, Kelly's terrified of pythons or snakes in general. Sure. I know. But Haley has held the boa constrictor and the python. She goes, they're not all what she thought they were going to be. Right. Again, when they're well fed, they don't want any part of you. But he falls backwards out the window, right? And then he takes off. But it kills Harry, who's the snake. Now, Harry's been the snake the entire time he's with the doctor. That's when he's giving him, here you go, real local now. So, in the scene where he's putting the liquor for him to drink,
yes,
right? It reminds me, remember Coach Joe? Remember his dog,
yeah, yeah,
right? Chester? And we go over, and I'm like, and cause when mom was taking care of, and we go over, I'm like, oh, how's it going, Coach? He's like, oh, hey, Chester. And Chester's a bulldog. So, you know the kind of movement you get of a bulldog. Well, Coach would pop open a beer for him and pop open a beer for Chester. Chester was very, very old. He'd pour beer in there, and Chester would just drink the beer and then let the worst farts go ever.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
I can imagine what that snake was doing.
No, there was on the review of the movie on the Blu-ray.
Yeah,
they made the point that all the snakes in the movie are real.
Oh yeah, everything's
real. They were all real. And so if they're all real, does the python drinking? Is he drinking real liquor?
No, it's just water.
No, but again, if it wasn't done in today, it could be a PETA problem.
Well, no,
but again, a scene like that in a movie today could be construed as animal cruelty.
I guarantee you that's just water with coloring in it.
No, I agree.
Because, first of all, it's the thinnest looking liquor I've ever seen. You know, kind of thing. I mean, he's supposed to be drinking, like, whatever, hooch he's drinking there, yeah, kind of thing. But it looks real thin. I mean, it's water with color. But once Harry's killed, Dr. Stoner is then enraged. He takes the Black Mamba out of the cage and goes to Steve's dorm where he's just finished having sex with the girl, right? And he sends her out. And because he's got the big game the next day. And he can't be tired, right?
So he's got to take a shower.
Take a shower. He puts the Black Mamba in the shower, and that's a real snake. Now, all the snakes, again, are real. They're correct snakes. They've all been milked, and there's no chance of someone actually... I mean, people got bit throughout the movie. I mean, it's not like roar bad, people getting mauled by lions and stuff, but people did get bit and stuff. But again, they milked all the snakes. They made sure they were get all the venom out of them. And the Black Mamba kills them in the shower, and then he snatches the Black Mamba and gets out. And that leads to the scene of her going to the police saying she killed him because she had sex with him,
yeah,
right?
You know, one of the asides on the Blu-ray was that Jeb Brown, Steve, was actually in the shower. And when the snake was put in there, in the scene that you see, he is actually petrified. And, I mean, anybody would be, but just any kind of a snake. But to have the Black Mamba there, and it actually did bite him.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it had no venom. But even a no-venom bite from a Black Mamba can still get infected, right, and they still had his shot. But it's the 70s. That's how they made movies back then, you know, kind of thing. Nowadays, it'd all be digital. It would be snakes on a plane, and there'd be a snake coming out and biting the one right in her boob when they're having sex, and it's, like, clearly fake.
So, anyway, okay, wait. So she said that. Okay. So when Dave wakes up the next morning, he looks in the mirror and he screams because he's, he's in pain. The fully dressed David is clenching the sheets and he's sweating and his hands are turning gray and lightly scaled. Now, the thing is this. Nowadays, it would be like total snake man, oh, he's a snake and whatever, kind of like not like Dreamscape, but I'm saying like it would be all CG'd snake man. This is very subtle. Like it's a lot of makeup.
Oh, yeah.
This movie kind of is like the way the Incredible Hulk was subtle in the 70s and early 80s. It's Ferrigno painted. It didn't have to be crazy. You just kind of bought what was there. It's very Kolchak the Night Stalker level kind of stuff. Like you kind of buy into it. You don't need craziness. You just buy us there.
Right. As the transformation begins, the makeup starts slowly show it. It's a very like a layered effect, and the reveal is very slow, but it's very effective.
All right. So he gives
obviously, and what happens is in the room where he's now starting to develop the scales fully, there's a mongoose there. And the mongoose is getting unbelievably angry.
Well, yeah, because the mongoose is there for the cobra, for the cobra. King cobra, yeah. He brings David to the lab where we see David facing the doctor. So you can only see the back of David's head through the window. So that's why people think, oh, he's fine. And he straps him to the table. And the problem is, as he's now turning into the snake, right, and they start kind of... That's still Dirk Benedict in the makeup, but they had to carry him to the set on a stretcher because he could not move because it would break the makeup.
It was like plastic.
Yes. They said the makeup was so heavy, but it's just kind of funny when you think of it. Where are we here? So Stoner tries to give him an injection, but David refuses to take it, but it says it'll calm him, to which Stoner lifts the button off the shirt and injects him. We also see scales starting to form in the chest now. And that's what he's saying. He was laying down. Anytime he had clothes, once his clothes were all off, or like most of his clothes were off, that's when he was in the makeup and had to carry him because it would break. Because they would take 4 to 5 hours to put all this makeup on. So the dean, Dr. Daniels, arrives. And as David's beginning to get weaker, Stoner hides him in the corner. And then he goes and takes care of the dean, right? And that's when the dean gets thrown into the basement, into the root cellar. It's a root cellar, right? And that's where it's an anaconda. She's a pregnant.
Well, it's a python. Oh, no.
It's an anaconda or a boa constrictor.
Yeah.
Whatever. She's pregnant, and she's roosting in the roots.
Yeah, but you don't see her right away.
Well, no, but we know she's there because she's pregnant early on. They bring her to the basement, and he says, oh, she'll go up and she'll nest up in the roots, which she gets up into the roots of in the root cellar, and then he throws them in there. Now, the problem is, she must be hungry because anaconda or boa constrictors or pythons do not attack humans unless they are hungry or provoked.
Provoked, right.
Yeah. So,
well, the thing with Dr. Daniels is that when he sees Stoner, he says, I'm not giving you the extension on Stoner then knocks him out and then brings him down here and has him tied up. And down there, Dr. Stoner has the two
cages. Well, but that goes back to being in the movie about the corn snake and kind of the coral snake. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But he says to him, the key to your chains is in there's a key in both of these that work. And now, as he says to him, he says because he didn't know
one key works, one key doesn't work.
One key, yeah.
Yeah.
So he says you have to know, and it's in the one. The key is in the cage with the
non-venomous
things. So you have the thing is, as he says to me, he says, red touches yellow, kill a fellow. Do you remember that? And, this is the tiger behind the door dilemma. The guy's, he's now scared, witless here.
Right.
Which one does he look in? And he's checking it. And finally, he puts his hand in the right one, gets the key out, and unlocks himself. And now he's...
Yeah. Well, see, I always thought it'd been funnier if the key was in the wrong one. And he's like, oh, no. And he still had to put his hand in the... See, nowadays, it would be in the venomous one. He would be lying to him. But right. And then, of course, they drop an entire snake on top of this guy, which was real snake dropped on top of a guy because it wasn't the snake attacking him. They don't want to attack. They just want to be left alone. In fact, most big snakes, unless they're hungry, want to be left alone. They want to go with, like, yeah. I mean, you go to the zoo, like the Bronx Zoo. The pythons, they're just laying there. They're not jumping around like that one. Well, they can't jump, but they're not. They're kind of laying there a lot of times. They're trying to sun themselves, and it's only when they're hungry do they go and get around to food and wipe it up and then like, eat it, and then they okay. Yeah.
And you know what's amazing is that the bile inside the juices inside a snake, they can digest anything.
Oh yeah.
Because they what the scene is, they actually eat him. Clothes and shoes, everything. The whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. So David tries to get Jerry to escape. He gets to the window and he collapses. So at this time, Christina visits because she's sent on that mission that for the fake snake, not a fake snake. There's no shipment. It's a fake shipment of a snake they want. Christina visits the Carnival Freak Show and is horrified when she realizes the bizarre snake man, right, is none other than the previous assistant. She looks at him and he goes, you know, like, you're like, you know, the it's very reminiscent of, well, it's like the simian flu, I guess, would cause in Planet of the Apes for people, you know. Yeah. So, but he can't speak, obviously, because that's the whole point. So it's the assistant Tim. So David is now losing all his strength in his legs and collapses, begins to move around like a snake on the floor. So this is again when he's in the makeup and he's wiggling around. And they told him, don't break it, like, because the makeup will start cracking and it'll look really bad. So he's got to kind of wiggle around, but not too much. Distraught, she races back home to save David, who is currently mutating into a king cobra, brought about by the injections that Stoner has been giving him. Stoner is bitten by the real king cobra from his lab and dies. Just as David transformation is complete, Christina arrives home and finds her father dead with the real cobra next to him. The police arrive and shoot the king cobra before, and obviously they didn't really shoot a cobra. Let's make sure people understand that. There's a puppet that is used, that a king cobra head puppet is used. They did not shoot a real cobra. Don't anyone freak out. The king cobra is real. When he's in he's in the pit with the cobra, it's real. When they shoot it, it's not real.
Right.
So the police arrive and shoot the king cobra. And the shooter before heading back to the lab where a mongoose is attacking David's neck, attempting to kill him. The police do not have a clear shot, and Christina screams David's name. The movie ends abruptly and leaves everything uncertain. Now, I just want to throw this out there. Christina yells, David, like a billion times in this movie. Now, it's not Bill, but it's getting close to it. Like, it's, you know, she
remember, she became infatuated with
him. But if she says, David, like, it's just constant, like, Bill, like, you know, always, I'm like, oh, man. Like, I had flashbacks. All right. So, let's just talk about... I like the movie. It's not that I'm saying but throughout the entire movie, God.
When David's in the full-blown makeup effect...
Yeah.
And then they have... And now he's transforming into the snake. It became a time-lapse photography to complete the transformation. Today, it would have been done in CG.
It's all CG.
But it's about the only shot in the movie that... You know, was not done in camera.
No, yeah, it was. It's like when Lon Chaney turns to the Wolfman.
Yeah.
You know, it's the time lapse. They have.
Well, but the thing is, with Lon Chaney, it's actually him sitting there.
No, I understand that. Right.
This is almost. I don't want to say cartoonish, but it's definitely not. Dirk Benedict laying there on the table.
Right. No, I understand that, but I'm saying it. But it's like it's like that kind of transformation. It's not like in Van Helsing when the werewolf is turning into a werewolf and he's ripping his skin off and throwing it everywhere. Like, you can't do that. Anyway, so the film's executive producers were Richard Zanuck and David Brown, who went on to produce Jaws. Right. So this is 73. Right. Yeah. So, you know, this is, you could say, this movie helped get Jaws because they became, you know, they were successful. I mean, we made money for what it had to do, and then went from there. Obviously, all the poisonous snakes featured were authentic, and the cast actually did have to interact with them during filming. The only shot where Strother Martin grabs the King Cobra's head during the show is when it's a puppet. Obviously, when he grabs it right here in his face, that's a puppet. But it's not a puppet like Lamb Chop puppet. It looks real.
Yeah.
So for the scene where Dr. Stoner first injects David, Strother Martin actually made real hyperdirk punctures into Dirk Benedict's arm with a needle, because we're going to do it for real. The poisonous snakes obviously were not defanged. There were 5 king cobras were imported from Thailand for the movie, ranging from 10 to 15 feet. They had recently caught in the wild and were in good health and full of venom. The snake park milking scene were real and meant to mimic Bill Haust. did at the Serpentarium in Florida daily. About one ounce of venom was collected during each take with no harm to the snakes. A different cobra was used for each take, so proper milk was there. The filming took most of the day, and all the cobras spent most of the time trying to escape the fence enclosure rather than raising up in traditional shape, which is true, because it doesn't want to mess with you.
Yeah.
It wants to be left alone.
I was amazed by the when Stoner actually feeds the snake.
Oh, with the okay,
gun.
So the feeding gun is nothing more than a caulk gun.
A caulking gun.
It's a caulk gun. Now, he's like, take this, I'll caulk you.
Now, is he actually feeding, or was that? Was that a puppet too? Again, you don't
know.
No,
that was real.
It was real.
Yeah, but it was devenomized, so it wasn't.
Yeah,
no, he wasn't gonna get bit.
No, but he was holding the snake and just.
But that's actually it. That's an actual feeding gun. That's real.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I mean, he was shown how to do it. So this movie was actually released by Universal, a double feature with a movie called The Boy Who Cried Werewolf. I don't know if you've ever seen that. I just got that on Blu-ray, making it. One of the last double bills ever released by the studio, because they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
That's a very drive-in 50s, 60s thing. And this is 73, and we're now seeing the end of all that and into, I mean, let's face it. You have Exorcist, Jaws, Star Wars. They're all coming. Life's never the same after those movies. So, and you can throw whatever 70 movie you want in there, but let's be honest. Exorcist, Jaws, and Star Wars have influenced so many things you can't even shake a stick at. Like, those are the most influential movies coming out of the late 70s, mid to late 70s.
And Alien, too.
Well, and yeah, right, but even Alien is technically a remake of it. Came from, you know, it's Terror Beyond Space. But I'm saying is Star Wars changed special effects. Jaws changed the way, like, a mainstream thriller could be shot and monster movies and stuff. And The Exorcist changed, okay, that's real. Like,
yeah.
That other stuff is fake, but that's real. It's like when Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe wrestle. Everything else is fake, but those two guys are real, right? They're not. I mean, they're wrestling, but still, that's what it was. It's just, I mean, there are other movies too, but those really change things. Obviously, I mentioned during the skinny dipping scene, their naughty bits were obscured. We've mentioned that. Later, a lamp is superimposed in front of the love scene.
Right.
When they're making, all of a sudden, there's no lamp in the room. Lamp is there. And the lamp is there in front of the love scene. And it looks so bad on the Blu-ray now.
Yes.
Because it's so crisp. You're like, oh boy. Like, it looks like a sticker. Like, bad.
Yeah.
But again, it's a movie that had to be PG.
Well, that's one of the problems with Blu-ray. Some extent.
Always.
Because now, you don't even need your glasses anymore. This thing is so clear. You know, crisp and clear.
So the house they used for Dr. Stoner's house is the same one they used as the Garth Ranch in The Virginian. 1962, but it's Universal backlots, right?
Yeah,
you gotta do it. Yeah. The film title in Spain was, and it has four S's, Silbido de Morte, which translates to hiss of death. In England, it's called four S's now, snake, right? Which is the alternate cover. I think that's the alternate cover on the Blu-ray, right? Isn't the flip over cover, isn't it snake on the inside, I think? If you look on the inside of the cover, I think it is. Here, let me check. It says Jaws, from Rooster to Jaws, snake.
Snake, right.
Right? Which is the inside insert of the cover. I'm actually using, you can't see it, folks, but I'm actually opening the Blu-ray, Dad's copy of the Blu-ray. And then for his transformation to the snake pit, he spent 7 hours in makeup. I'd said five. And the final stage of transformation, he had to be carried to the set on a stretcher, which we mentioned. So if you're interested in buying this movie, because that's about the only way you're going to see it, like, because it's not on Netflix, it's not on Hulu, I mean, you know, you can go search for, it's not even on like YouTube or anything. The DVD, which is so bare bones. Now, we both have the DVD, I'm thinking. We bought that way back in the day. It is super bare bones. It's just the movie. It's not bad. I mean, if you just want to see the movie, it's not bad. That's $8.52. Two True Freaks website, Amazon link, click on it, buy it right through there. Help keep the lights on here. $8.52. It's not a bad movie for if you're like, oh, I don't know if I like these kind of things. If you like B-movies, this is a B-movie. This is, you know, it's the concept is kind of like ridiculous, but it's no more ridiculous than The Wasp Woman or The Fly or for any other movie for that matter.
Well, I think the story will hook you.
But I'm saying, like, the concept that he's turning him into a snake by injecting venom, like, that's kind of crazy, but this no more crazy than anything else. Like, if you're willing to buy
that premise,
you're good. And it's not, I mean, the acting is good, but it definitely says, hey, 1973, we're here. You are not sitting there going, I wonder when this takes place. It is clearly the 70s. The clothes and the cars.
Sure, yeah.
Haley was watching this with me. Because Kelly watches like this, you know, with snakes are not their thing. Haley's like, Daddy, why are those people wearing those old clothes? I go, those were fashionable. She goes, not now they're not. You know, my six-year-old, the fashion guru.
He should see what I was wearing in the pictures that I had.
Right, but what I'm saying is, but like to her, movies don't have time references. Like to her, it's new to her. Right, so that movie, they should look like 19. No, they're like 2017.
I guarantee it's just like, Grandpa, that shirt looks silly.
Yeah, well, she does.
Yeah.
But the Blu-ray we're speaking of actually is the best release you're ever going to see of this movie. It is crystal clear. It has great documentaries and special features. And currently, it's $19.99 on Blu-ray. Now, I pre-ordered it. You ordered yours after. I pre-ordered mine. So I actually got mine for like around $16 because it had dropped and dipped in price. And then you got yours, I don't know if you got it off Amazon or off eBay, down the road. But again, the price is kind of in that, you know, $17 to $20 range normally.
Yeah, you might be able to find it on eBay because it's been out a while now. You might be able to find somebody.
It came out in the spring.
Yeah, somebody might be able to let
it go. But even then, by the time you pay shipping and stuff on that, like, you know, you're most likely, your best well, like, probably like, to go right on.
Well, like Movie Mars is one of those that if they bought 1,000 of these. And now they're
Yeah, what I'm saying is, but like those are kind of things. But to me, the Blu-ray is far superior to the DVD, just in the quality and the special features. You want to talk about?
But there's only one real special feature. There's new interviews with Dirk Benedict and Heather Menzies. Obviously, it's in the last year or so. The interview with Dirk Benedict is worth the price of admission.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
It's unbelievable.
And it's long. It's not like it's a five-minute little, TV interview. This is a long 20-something minute. And this is Shout Factory. So this is the Shout Factory? Yes. It's Scream Factory because it's Shout Factory's horror thing. So you know they put full effort into everything. I don't care what they release. Their releases, even if you're like, well, I already have the Blu-ray of this. Anything that Shout or Scream Factory, it's Shout Factory is the same thing, put out, they put a lot of effort into it. These interviews are great. The one with Dirk Benedict is...
It's amazing.
Well, it's funny when you hear him, he had, I think it was throat cancer or whatever, but his family didn't believe in using, like they were like holistic and whatever. So it's all the things that's all fine. And I'm not being funny the way he's speaking, but the way he just offhandedly talks about like, well, there's this venomous snake around us, and it's just, you know, like, and he's got the cigar there the whole time, and it's just like, you're like, you feel like he had a few to drink,
yes.
And they said, let's talk, kind of thing. What I don't mean funny is in like, oh, he sounds funny, because it's not nothing to laugh about someone's ailment, but the way he's talking about things, and so glib about, like, I think we mentioned it in Roar, which has also just been released in the last year, where people are really mauled by lions and whatever. You know, it would be like someone saying, well, I remember when the lion bit that guy's face off. Oh, it was the funniest thing. You know, like, here he's talking about Strother Martin getting pissed at one point and getting in the car and then driving off and then crashing, and they had to go get him and bring him back to set and stitch his head up, and it's like, I was like, oh, he was crazy, and like, things were so different, and he goes, I didn't even want to make this movie, you know, kind of thing, which is funny because... You know, most people know Dirk Benedict from the A-Team. He's Face from the A-Team. Some of you might remember him from the movie Body Slam, where he, you know, plays the unscrupulous, you know, manager kind of thing there with Roddy Piper and Tonga Tom as they take on Lou Albano's team. And then people know him from other TV stuff. But, I mean, he was never a major star.
Yeah, he had the look.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, too, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to do plays. And he didn't want to be tied down to a movie for a year. And he says that. He goes, yeah, we made this movie. I didn't get tied down for a long time. It's what I wanted. He wanted to go live his life and do his thing. It's the 70s and in the early 80s, you know, the time of excess.
Yeah.
So, not in excess. That's a different thing. Anyway, so, anything else to add on this?
No, we're good.
Okay, so... this is, you know, again, which is dropping in August here. If you want to drop us a line, botsbugsbabes, at gmail.com. So if you want to drop us a line about anything, and, you know, we'll gladly read them on the air, and I'll get back to you personally. We have a special episode coming up sometime during the middle, and you're like, it is the middle, more a little later in the middle of August. I don't want to, it's going to be a surprise. I don't want to tell you what's going to happen. But on the 21st, look for something, but don't look directly at something because you go blind, and that's what I'll leave it at. So if you went blind, I told you not to. Okay, but the September episode, of course, we know, and we Luke was here for a little bit, and we were able to record the Golden Voyage of Sinbad, of course. We're looking forward to talking with Luke and get him on the show. Luke does contribute often, obviously, with his emails and stuff he sends in. And if you want to hear my brother, you want to listen to his Daikaiju podcast, that's Earthstruction Rective. You'll hear that in the outro of the show. If you want to catch us, of course, get back to the wrestling with myself, Luke, and, you know, the hair metal hero Chris Tyler, as we talk about wrestling, a novel thing this today in podcasting, actually talk about wrestling. You can catch us, of course, on The Vault as well, as we are discussing, we are in the middle of the Hammer movies we're talking about. We had actually, I don't know if you even heard that, we had covered Horror of Dracula, Curse of Frankenstein, The Mummy. I mean, we're talking about some really good Hammer movies, and we're talking about the Nightmare on Elm Street series, which we're currently doing as we're recording this. So I'll be on the lookout for that special coming around around the 21st of the month. Just don't look directly at something or you'll go blind. Keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag BotsBugsBabesPodcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?